Hello. Welcome.
Hello,
welcome,
bro.
Welcome. Historical Significance proudly presents Loving Our Longtimers, Speaker Meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm Brian, I'm an addict, and I've got the privilege and honor of serving as your leader this evening. Each week we invite speakers to share with us their ish and or personal knowledge of the origins and early history of NA, many of whom have 30 years or more clean. We are recording these historically significant speakers to better share their experience, strength, and hope with our fellowship, and to preserve our long-timer's message. Let us open this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the third step prayer, please. Many of us have said, take my will and my life, guide me in my recovery, show me how to live. This week our guest is Billy A. from Allentown, Pennsylvania. And Billy's been around for 33 years and been very involved. One time he was the vice chair of the World Public Information, and he's worked with East Coast Convention before, I'm sure, and he's been a sponsor, he's been a friend, he's been a wild man, he's been it all. If there is an NA, Billy's been it, and he knows about a court case that we've had in our past lives, and so Billy's got a lot of experience on personal and service, so I'll just turn it over. Billy?
When I come, Bill, and actually have over 34 years clean, cleaned up November 16th of 1979 and have not had to use since. You know, and, I was sharing last week, and I'm sure you got part of that recorded, but, you know, I don't want to have to cover a lot of that there again. But the situation is, I was just down in Florida at that the Fellowship Literature Committee meeting conference that we had. And, it was a great experience because it made me relive my experiences when I first came into Narcotics Anonymous and first got excited and found the real NA in our philosophy. And I think that's basically what I like to talk about. It's a philosophy that was developed through the open participatorial literature structure that we had at that moment. And what happened this weekend at Florida was the same thing. You know, and, it just inspired me being there and being around addicts and working with addicts from 14 different states that were participating this weekend and, you know, going over the gray book and doing what I would call the slightest edit you could ever do on a book, and that's keeping the philosophy and the content intact without changing anything but run-on sentences, putting periods where they belong, misspellings, and very few instances trying to be inclusive instead of talking about dope sickness, talking about, you know, disease bottoms that, you know, that brought us in, not dope sickness that brought us in, but actually our disease had a hit a bottom and it was emotional instability that brought us here. You know, and then that was the limit of our edit that we did, and it was exciting just seeing some of the world lit people that I participated with back then in the early 80s writing our basic texts. You know, and that's what got me clean, was writing that basic text. I mean, because when we first got here, we didn't have a book. We had five pamphlets and a little white book. You know, and sobriety was still in our literature. You know, and addicts didn't identify as addicts back then. They identified everything but, you know, and the most common was dope fiends, you know, and cross-addicted alcoholics, dually addicted alcoholics, but not addicts. And I still remember this day I went to the Second East Coast Convention, Narcotics Anonymous, and the literature people were there writing this book. And I met my first real NA sponsor there, Joe Proctor from Memphis, Tennessee, who's now passed. That's why I'm using his name. And then my second real NA sponsor there, Greg Pierce, that passed in, I think, 98 or 99, somewhere in there, that he passed on. And they were developing this basic text. And at that point, they had come out with the gray book, which my home group had participated in some input and some small donations to try to help write the book, you know, that I belong to. And it was just an exciting period of time being involved with people that were writing a book for us. You know, and I remember bringing that book home and, of course, the inventory guide home from that conference and slapping the book down on the table. And our meetings had about 40 to 50 people in at that point. You know, we had approximately about 5 or 6 meets a week in my hometown that we had developed. They were all part of one group called the Day by Day Group, Narcotics Anonymous, that changed its name later to Recovery First because it wouldn't affiliate itself anymore with using an out piece of literature from another fellowship. And we felt our name identified us and affiliated us with AA at that point. So when I brought that literature back, I put it on the table, slammed it on the table, and said, "This is our book." And the impact of that, you know, because I basically was that excited. I dumped all the AA literature in the garbage can. I dumped all the DNA clinic stuff in the garbage cans. We used to have 5 or 6 8-foot tables. One had our coffee on it, had our white book and our little 5 pamphlets on it. The other tables were just full of this other literature. And when I slammed that book down the table, I told them we had a book. And, you know, basically let them know that we are Narcotics Anonymous now. And I dumped all that literature in the garbage cans, and I looked at everyone and told them, you know, the bottom line is that we're no longer going to be this other fellowship. And if people didn't like it, they could leave or they could, you know, fight, which I had preferred at that point in my time in my life because I had no steps in my life. And I told them they can just surrender and be part of this program. And everyone left except my wife, myself, and a newcomer. And that's how we restarted Narcotics Anonymous in Allentown under Narcotics Anonymous name with Narcotics Anonymous literature. Using the great book at first as our basic text because that's the only book we had that was called Narcotics Anonymous, and we wrote it by addicts for addicts. You know, we started our fellowship off with that book, and we got involved in writing of literature and participation in open structure. We were part of the Philadelphia area at that point in time. We lived 60 miles from Center City, Philadelphia. That area, I went up to the Lehigh Valley. Went to Reading, went down into Delaware, went over to almost to Lancaster, part of Chester County, and went and took all South Jersey and all the state of Delaware up with the area service body that we participated in. And, you know, we start wanting to get the message out there that there's hope for addicts, you know, and that there's, you know, and, so we started participating in anything we could get involved in. You know, we did a thing we called an adathon. Joe Proctor told us that we needed to have a function to get NA moving in our area. You know, and we did that. And Joe came from Oregon on a bus to be there with us. And people from Pittsburgh came out. We had, there's 3 of us in our own fellowship, and we had over 200-some people there. It was, it'd be like a convention today, except in a church building that we rented the whole facility out. You know, and we had speakers the whole weekend, workshops. My wife and I provided all the food. You know, and we just had addicts here camping out in the church for 3 days, you know, participating and carrying the message. And from that, a couple people showed up, basically cross-addicted addicts, again, from the other fellowship and stuff that showed up, and some stayed, you know, and participated with us after that. And the realization there was hope in Narcotics Anonymous was a miracle there, and we started to grow here in Allentown. You know, and I was in the World Convention in Miami in 1981. Joe got me to go to the World Convention and helped me break my denial structure and get me to go there. And ended up in Miami, and the World Literature people were there at, because the World Literature 6 conference was going on, the finalization of our basic texts, in the first 10 chapters. They were completing it down there. So I got involved, with the people there again, got excited, came back home, and I was elected area chair that weekend, and I also was elected the ASR to represent the area at the Mid-Atlantic region, which the region went from Virginia Beach to Maine. It was a very large region. When I got there, I was put on, became the public information vice chair for the region. And, I said, if you're involved with that, you had to get involved with World Public Information. I was already on World Lit. Got involved in World Public Information. I got involved with World H&I, World Literature, World Convention Guideline, the World Convention Committee, developing guidelines for World Convention. I helped set up World Outreach Committee at that point in time, and I got heavily involved in service. I did not have a STEP program. Joe Proctor was just helping me with that there, getting me to write STEPs. And through the process of writing STEPs, I started to be able to do service, not because of being a service junkie, but I started doing service out of the 12 steps. I wanted to carry this message of hope and promise of freedom. We helped develop the whole East Coast, but then I went to Pittsburgh to Robert Morris University to the 3rd East Coast, put the bid in for the 4th East Coast, and I become chair of the 4th East Coast Convention here at Lehigh University. And that was actually the first meeting in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, was a convention. We had 1,000 addicts show up for that convention. It was an exciting time. People were excited about this convention. And through that process, someone showed up from the other fellowship again at that convention and become an NA member. I started sponsoring, and we started Narcotics Anonymous in Bethlehem. Our home group developed an outreach committee. We started meetings in different parts, which become our area down in Bucks County. We started a meeting in Sellersville. That was an outreach meeting for our home group. And then we started one up in Schuylkill County in Pottsville, PA. We started one in Warren County, New Jersey. And we start sponsoring these meetings so they could become groups. And we made a 3-year commitment to each one of these year groups. We started one in Eastern PA, which is Northampton County. And our group took the responsibility of making sure the meetings were open, making sure they had literature in them, making sure there was people there to sponsor people, and making sure that door was open and a meeting happened on them nights. And that was our responsibility. And as we got newcomers in, we start giving them responsibilities for the group and develop them into groups, and then they become their own group. And that was just, we were fired up wanting to do something for Narcotics Anonymous. As we developed this stuff, Narcotics Anonymous started growing because we traveled to our regional meetings, in Virginia. We traveled up in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, traveled to them in up in New Jersey, Connecticut, and we assisted people in helping them develop their areas and their regions. It was just so much excitement back then that then the process that went over the years was I got heavily involved in world service at the same time. And it's like Brian said, I become world PI vice chair. I served that 2 years in a row, never to be elected to chairperson position. They wanted to elect me again as a PI vice chair for a 3rd year, and I told them I declined. I would not serve a committee in 3 years in a row as a public information vice chair. Either I step up and be the chair, or, because we're supposed to have turnover in services. And I got involved in that process, and I surrendered to Narcotics Anonymous, and participated in the fellowship. I think it was an exciting time. And in the meantime, our basic text was being changed on a pretty continuous basis. When the first edition came out, it was not the book that we approved. They had changed the 4th and 9th tradition. And there was an upheaval in the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous over this, that they had changed our book. we, you know, demanded that our book be returned, and they gave us a second edition. Through the second edition, everyone embraced it. And then they, at the conference again, they decided to violate the fellowship's group conscience process that the fellowship had approved, and they decided that they were going to violate conference procedures. There was a process back then that you had to have everything in the conference agenda, you know, something like 90 days before the conference, that they had to go out to the fellowship. There was nothing in the conference agenda about changing our basic text. So we went to the conference that year, which I was in an RSR at that point in time. They changed our book. You know, and they did it through a process that was, there was no process for them to do it. They actually put it on the floor said a group in Nebraska, said there was a problem with this year and wanted it heard in the conference, which was no process for a group to be heard unless they went through their group process, through their area, through their region, and then be put in the conference agenda, which did not happen. The trustees put this on the floor and said we had to deal with it. And the fellowship itself, was violating that process. And then they said that we had to have it back. And at the end of the conference, their decision they made was to send it out to the groups. And the groups had to have their vote back in 60 days, which there was no real process for that to happen, because your RSR goes back and reports to a region, which is usually the following month. Then the region, the ASRs go back to their area, report to the area, which is the following month after that. And then it goes to the groups and then comes back a month later. And then it got to get to the RSR and then be called into the World Service Office or to the conference chair. I know our area and our region decided not to participate in that process. And then they said it changed. And we never heard anything about it again, except 10 years later, they said, oh, we found the vote. And the fellowship was upset again about this year, that they had done something like this here, but it continued. Then they decided to change the little white book and let the trustees edit the little white book, okay? And they did that, and the fellowship approved the little white book, but that was done through the conference agenda when we voted on it. But it was not done through the conference agenda for the trustees to do that. That was done on the conference floor. There was just turmoil, constant turmoil at the conference between the office, the board of directors, the committee chairs, and everyone wanted to believe that things were going to be all right and things we could change the conference to where it would be a voice for the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And we got really excited. We kept working in our groups, kept working in our areas, kept developing Narcotics Anonymous, getting more excitement. And why all this stuff was going on, the turmoil was there, but addicts believed that we could change with them. And we kept participating, staying involved. And I served that conference for 6 years. And the pinnacle happened when they changed our basic text from third edition revised to the fourth edition. And they were working on It Works How and Why, and the book, that book was done by a writer, and the fellowship came up in arms and stopped that book from doing that. And then they led us to believe that we would get our It Works How and Why would be input and reviewed and written the same way our basic text was. And they had the Chicago Lit Conference, and they had the L.A. Lit Conference, and that's the last the fellowship was actually involved in writing literature by addicts for addicts. And they dissolved that their editorial process and put it in-house again. And then they collected who they want to input the book, brought them to L.A., up to the office, and they were chosen by them who was going to be involved, and then they gave it to a writer, and it's in the one resume about that where him and two other writers wrote the book, and he inputted over a third of the entries himself into It Works How, Why, and Just for Today, and the service guide. You know, and that they eliminated the whole process of addicts being involved. And that's the, I think, was the greatest aspect for me staying clean ever in Narcotics Anonymous is being able to be involved. And we decided that we're going to print our basic text on our own as groups. And that's when it led to, as Brian was saying about the court case, they sued a member named Grateful Dave, Dave Moorhead versus WSO Incorporated, 3rd District in Philadelphia Federal Court. They sued him for copyright infringements. And there was a settlement in that court case, which you can contact the 3rd District and get the paperwork, or you can go on to Radio Free NA and download files for it and be able to make them decisions yourself about the court case and the book. But we printed the third edition revised with the original 4th and 9th tradition responsible to the group. And we still print it today as a group project. But as that process happened and sitting on that court stand and listening to a Judge Pollock, tell the fellowship or the conference in the fellowship that it should not be this courthouse, that this is an inside, Narcotics Anonymous should be making them decisions, not a judge. The settlement that came about was the office and Dave were supposed to both work together to bring peace to the fellowship, and they're supposed to do a unity statement, which they did the unity statement, but then they were supposed to send the 3rd District Bias to every home group in the world a copy of the book, and they were supposed to send all the changes sent to the fellowship, and the fellowship was supposed to take a group tally and on what book they wanted. The conference never allowed that to happen. Instead, and it's in the court case where they were in violation and breach of the court, where they basically told the judge that this isn't going to happen at the conference, that it's out of order. And David filed an appeal to that, tried to appeal it, but Dave died in the meantime. And then they would not allow me to substitute myself as a defendant. At that point in time, I was so frustrated, so lost in the fellowship that I stopped being involved with the known structure. And I stayed clean. Got more involved in the wrestling world with my son. Started to participate more in training athletes and going to my home group, and trying to develop a structure that would be responsible to group conscience. And I did that. I got involved in a new structure called As Is for Narcotics Anonymous and tried to help develop that. And through that process, I stayed in touch with addicts that were isolated, were pushed away from the process, were not included. And I stayed in touch with them and started helping them develop groups. We went back to studying the Gray Book, the pre-publication draft of the basic text is what we did as our home group. And we studied the 3rd District Revised with the original 4th and 9th tradition. And they became our books. And we started to grow spiritually sound and trying to help other addicts to be able to find that same thing that we had found as we did in the early days. We got back to the basics. What helped us through that was surrender, the acceptance of the disease of addiction, that we're powerless over the disease, and to come to believe that there's a greater power that restores the sanity, and sanity was the same way of thought for us, to work together cohesively in a group structure. No matter what else happened, we were going to be Narcotics Anonymous regardless of everything else. I stayed clean through that process, had to go through some trials and tribulations, in recovery, physical pain, injuries, had to get operations and stay clean through the whole process. Did not use drugs for the pain. I relied on God. I relied on my sponsor. I relied on prayer, meditation instead, as the steps talk about. And I got help for my injuries. I had my hand crust severed. My fingers were severed right off. Had them reattached. Went through two years of therapy, 4 operations, and stayed clean. I had a reliance on my sponsor and other NA members on how to get through that clean and not have to take pain medication for them things. it just got more exciting. I started training kids. I created the largest wrestling school in the world, over 600 some athletes, produced over 100 some state champions in the state of Pennsylvania alone, a couple in the state of New Jersey, because these were my clientele. I know a couple guys went on to be Maryland state champs that came to my wrestling school, I produced guys at every level, all the way to the Olympic level, where I had guys ranked in the, top 5-6 guys in the country, and I had some world team trial champions, and I took a lot of pride in what I did in the real world in that sense, working with kids and assisting them to become great athletes and to get scholarships. I plugged kids into some of the most major universities, had a wrestler at Harvard, had wrestlers in Penn, had wrestlers go to, all the military academies. Got a couple guys right now in the military academy, one in the Air Force Academy right now. I got two in the Coast Guard Academy right now, one in the West Point that I trained. And this is what Narcotics Anonymous gave me, was the ability to train athletes and to get involved. And if I was not going to be allowed to participate, at the level of service that I had become accustomed to, I was going to find avenues to be able to give back to society. And that's what I did. I gave back, and I stayed with the home group, developed myself as a human being, and seeking the spirituality and the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, learning how to surrender my ego, learning how to surrender and become part of the fellowship as a whole, in a sense, of the groups that were isolated, to be involved with them and to help find the people that were struggling and needed help, that were pushed out of service, that were accustomed to this open participatory process, and start to redevelop that. And I think that's what this weekend was about, the redevelopment of the literature process and the excitement. We had over 200 some people show up for the full weekend. We had 13 different states there. It was just so exciting. I mean, when Vito spoke on the Friday night, it wasn't even standing room in the room on Friday night. And we worked there on the Gray Book, and the other room was going on and working on total abstinence, which became, they changed the name to complete abstinence. Just the excitement that came out of there, and to have one of our longtime members, just post on emails today that he really feels it's the first time he feels real hope for the fellowship, to be able to run the fellowship again. Being at that conference and re-excited, reunited people, and to meet people I've met on this, in these phone calls when we're working on total abstinence, and to meet them down in Florida, she came from Chicago to be there with, was down there with us for a couple of days, and just to sit in that process, to have a guy there from Alaska, people there from Michigan were there, and Ohio, Kentucky, Georgia, Virginia, just people that were there to participate and just get real excited about carrying a message again through print and develop that their process. And that excited me this weekend, and I think that was the greatest thing that I could feel. I felt like I did in 1981 when I first was given that Gray Book and first asked to get involved and loved and cared enough to get me involved to participate, with addicts in recovery. And I was just overwhelmed with the joy this weekend. And to bring that back home and have newcomers calling me up and asking me, for the step guides and, making them phone calls and reconnecting, with addicts that way. And, pick a new sponsee up down in Florida that's excited about this recovery process, and to see people that never wrote before to participate in that process. And, I got a call there saying, they actually started the Gray Book meeting down there in Longwood, Florida today, that I'd have been proud of them. They broke up, opened the Gray Book and started reading it in the meeting there today. And that was our secretary that was part of it, Skinny. Was part of that there. He got so excited when he read that book, and just seeing the eyes of people getting excited, overwhelmed me this weekend, just seeing that happen. And that's what happened to me in 1981, to get that same excitement, that same feeling, and wanting to do something to get this message out, you know, the promise of freedom, I mean, message of hope and promise of freedom to any addict that need not die without hearing about the, you know, recovery, that they don't need to die in the horrors of addiction, but they can find hope, as Jimmy Cate talked about in The End of the Road. You know, and as Jimmy's statement, in the one statement he says, you know, if we didn't do damage to ourselves, you know, before addiction, we sure did afterwards. And the only process, you know, is staying clean and being clean in sobriety of being over any other way of life. That's the excitement to me, is that we can get that message back out there again. And through my life, you know, working, having 34 years and 4 months clean today, you know, just thinking about that whole process of development of the steps in my life, that personal experience, to be able to go through the things I did clean, you know, and to be able to recover from the disease of addiction and not have an addiction overwhelm my life today, you know, and have peace in that there, knowing I never got to go back out there again. I mean, I'm not afraid of using. What I'm afraid of more would be to use and have to live in that way of life, in them struggles, in that pain again. I never want to feel that pain of active addiction. And I know the only place I can get freedom for is Narcotics Anonymous today. You know, and that's the excitement. I mean, when my son got strangled in 1998 at the high school, he was one of the number one kids in the country, in the rest of the world, and he got strangled and got anoxia, brain injury, and the coach covered it up and had to take that to federal court, and, you know, stuck in a 10-year court battle and not having to act out of my shortcomings, you know, and just having the belief that my son is going to be all right someday, and helping develop him into a young man through the program. You know, was I able to do that? And, you know, the feelings when that coach had my son basically straightened out his mind for smoking a cigarette, and my son got strangled and had his blood flow cut off his brain and got, you know, 12 to 15 dead spots in his brain. You know, and the feelings of going through that there, and then watching my son lose trust in me, you know, and being able to get him through that, you know, just miracles after miracles that have happened in this program for me, and to be able to develop that, to be able to grow spiritually, you know, and to help other addicts in recovery is beyond, you know, when I think about that. You know, there's so much hope for me today that I cannot even, begin to show my gratitude to this fellowship for what it's done for me. And I'm not talking about the service. I'm talking about the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous and what it's done for me. You know, the experience it has given me is beyond. I mean, to be able to have the ability to come to know a loving, caring, compassionate God. When I, you know, at the end of my addiction, there was no God in my life. I had so much anger towards God. You know, and when I walked into this fellowship, my thoughts, I saw that third step. Yeah, there was a first and second step, but I saw that third step and thought this program was about God. I wasn't a stupid man. You know, and it's one of the reasons I didn't make any other fellowship. I mean, because they said stupid sayings like, that their ashtray could be your higher power, the doorknob could be your higher power. And I thought, this is insanity. You know, and but I walked in Narcotics and I saw that third step again, saying, you know, that we turn our will lives over to the care of God as we understood him. The first thing I didn't understand was understood him. I didn't have an understanding of God. I had misinterpretations of God. I was stuck with years of other people's interpretations, my grandmother's interpretations, my minister's interpretations, my junior high principal's interpretations of God. You know, and, at 5 years old, my father was going to commit suicide and kill me. And I still remember this day when my grandmother said to my father, "You cannot kill Billy. He's not baptized." And that's all I could hear was, I wasn't baptized, so he was not allowed to kill me. But if I was baptized, he could have, I guess. You know, and that's what my young mind thought, and how dare this God, you know, condemn me to hell. As she said, he's going to go to hell because he's not baptized. You know, I didn't even know God at this moment in my life, but yet that was buried in my subconscious. And then my junior high minister, I mean, principal, when I defended mentally challenged, well, they call back then we called it mental retardation kid, who another guy kicked down three steps. Well, actually, it was six steps, but it was actually three stories. Kicked him down the stairwells and beat him up and let him lay there on the bottom of the steps. A kid named Marty, who just used to sing all days and roll his head. And Marty told me what happened to him. The next day, I beat that kid to a living pulp with a ball and chain. And I got taken into the principal's office. He had one of them big old paddles with holes in it, slapping on his hand, and he's reading the Bible to me and basically directed me to things where I'm going to go to hell if I don't change my ways. I didn't listen about changing my ways, but I heard I was going to hell. And then he called the chief police up. He beat me with a paddle, read the Bible to me. Chief police locked me up for the rest of the day in a cell, you know, in the local town cell, you know, and let me know this is where I'm headed, to prison. And that's what I picked up that day. God hates me. You know, I'm not going to make it in this world. I'm going to end up in prison. You know, and that's what I thought about. And then my grandmother used to take me to Sunday school. And, you know, my interpretation of God at that point in my life basically, affected me. A Baptist minister basically condemning the whole congregation to going to hell. And that's what I heard, okay, that I was going to hell. And, had a bad interpretation of God, and that's what I walked into the fellowship with, angry at God. And Joe Proctor had me write about my anger, and I wrote about this anger, and he showed me you're not angry with God, you're angry with other people's interpretation. You don't have an understanding of God, so let us help you. And I went to those that came before me, like Greg, like Joe, like Jimmy, to get some form of an understanding of God. And Joe had me put periods behind and called it good holy direction. And that I worked on for years, was good holy direction, being able to be led to a spirit in this program, something that kept us all clean, something that was loving and caring, and it helped me to stay clean. You know, and I think that was the greatest excitement in the program, Narcotics Anonymous, is receiving that, getting help for myself. You know, and it was beyond me. And then doing the four-step inventory guide and doing that, the old four-step inventory guide, not the new stuff, but the old stuff, and being able to deal with all the issues that I lived in and get help for it. You know, and write about, not what I did, but how I reacted to things, how I developed into a human being, where I had gone wrong, and I looked at the positive things also. You know, what were the good things about me in my life? And I looked back as a child, and I was not all bad. I had a lot of good things in my life. You know, and I had a thing to help elderly people. You know, and I was a giver when I was a child. You know, and so I had some things to fall back on. But why I reacted certain ways in my life, I was able to find them and not have to be stuck with them. You know, and it set me free. That guide actually set me free to be able to understand myself, to be able to get help for myself, and to help me to be able to do a fifth step then, to admit the exact nature of my wrongs to God, to myself and another human being, to actually admit the exact nature of my wrongs was based in fear. All my wrongs were based in fear. And to be able to do a sixth step when it talked about our character defect. My character defect is fear. And I believe it's my only defect of character, it's fear. My shortcomings are my reactions to that fear in the seventh. The shortcomings, my reactions. I react from fear with anger. I react with rage. Depression comes off of that. And to be able to ask God to remove my shortcomings from me, I think that's been a miracle in my life, is having them shortcomings removed in my life and letting go, letting God. And it's the same thing I've had to do with the service structure, to let go, let God, and to participate in any other area that I'm allowed to participate in carrying our message. You know, and to be able to look at my age step, to write that list, to actually write a list and to be set free because of my fourth step, my fifth, and my sixth and seventh step, that I'm not judging other people now, but I've let go of that, and I got no more excuses, and I can look on exactly who I harm and put them on that list. You know, and then myself was the first person on that list because I hurt myself the most over the years. And the amends process, the direct amends to myself was to change myself. To change myself, and my amends to my grandmother, my mother, and was to change myself to mend the situations in my life, to be able to change myself to help others. And there's, you know, there's some people you'll never make amends to, so how do I make indirect amends? It's changing myself, helping others, carrying the message. That's all part of my amends process. And the 10th step, promptly admitting when I'm wrong, you know, and continuing to take this inventory, promptly admitting when I'm wrong, you know, and not having excuses, not making excuses. I mean, because you can look and say, yeah, I'm wrong, but however, if you didn't do this, well, I've already, then I'm not admitting it. I'm looking at you instead. I need to let go of that and just say, I'm wrong. No matter what else happened, I made a mistake and I've wronged you, and let go of it. There is no excuse to hurt another human being. There's no excuse whatsoever. And I have to change that part of myself. I have to have a personality change. I have to have a spiritual change in this program. You know, in the 11th step, to continue to pray, to meditate, to improve my conscious contact with God, to improve that relationship. And I look at it simple. What is prayer? It's talking. What is meditation? Listening. So I talk to God, and I try to listen for God, and God shows me a lot of times for working through others. This weekend was a God's work, not ours. And I think that was the neatest thing, watching God in action this weekend, watching God work through our shortcomings, our fears. You know, and I had fears this weekend. I got scared that, that personalities were going to take over, and I was ready to walk out at times, and people got me to stay, and work through that with me, that they wanted my input. My thing was letting go of our ego and getting on the same page together, quit working against one another. And I got scared that wasn't going to happen, but it happened. It happened this weekend where we sat down, put our differences aside, sat down, and come out with that first chapter, and it read beautiful, and it's not done yet. I mean, there's going to be more input review. There's other groups going to be input review in the gray, and hopefully we're going to come up with a finalization of a book that's going to be a powerful book, and that one day we can do a true fellowship edit on our basic text, and that the input will come from that gray book. But the gray book will be ready for that purpose then. You know, and that excited me that we can do these things and to grow together in unity. And that 12th step, haven't had that spiritual awakening as a result of those steps. We practice these principles in all our affairs, and we try to carry this message. And these, you know, before it was those steps, and that's the way I'm saying it today, those steps, we practice these principles, that those steps are the previous 11 and a half, and we had to have a spiritual awakening as a result of those steps. We practice these principles are the traditions of Narcotics Anonymous. Participation in a group setting to be able to carry this message, to have hope and to put our different side, to have anonymity, and the anonymity of bearing no name, no title, but being of spirit. And that excited me this week because I saw it in action. I saw that in action this weekend, and I'm just so excited about getting as is on June 20th and the 22nd. So excited about being able to participate there. And though I know we're going to be right in there, I know we're going to spend part of the conference and inputting, reviewing the gray and planning of the projects out. And I know in the first week in October, Gentle Home Group is conscious and to start our tradition book up that we wanted to work on that Yaz's said we should work on, and it's going to start. I got really a lot of hope for this project, these projects again, and getting the Just for Today, the old input that the groups had done, getting that back together and coming up with a meditation book. Not knowing what we're going to call it yet, but there is no essence of what we're going to call it. That's exciting for me, and I'm just looking, to be involved and to participate, to be, oneness with all of everyone in this program. That's my hopes. Yeah, and I'm going to thank you for allowing me to participate tonight and share my experience, strength, and hopes with you. loving care for you. God bless. You there, Brian?
Thank you, Bill, for sharing with us your unique insights. Truly been a pleasure. We do like to ask questions, so we have some pre-made, and then we may come up with some others. But what we like to ask is, how many meetings? Okay, you started one. You helped start one of the first meetings in Allentown, apparently, correct?
Right.
So, not counting just as-is stuff, how many meetings are in Allentown today that they call themselves Narcotics Anonymous?
Oh, there's probably about 40 meetings in Allentown.
Okay. So, now how many meetings do you attend weekly?
I go to 3 or more a week.
Awesome, awesome. So, how often do you contact your sponsor?
Every day.
All right. Now, do you still get pen and paper and work steps?
Yes, I write steps daily. I read, write, participate in that process every day.
Awesome. About how many times have you gone through the steps formally?
About 20.
Wow. Awesome, awesome. Now, how many times, I know the answer to this, but some of these folks have heard it before, but they may not know. How many times on a wing and a prayer and 21 cents in your pocket have you traveled hundreds of miles to an NA function?
Countless. I can't even count them.
Yeah, I know that.
Just did it this weekend.
Still doing it.
Right. Did it went to Missouri in February the same way.
Yep. So we just do what we do because, well, you know, Bo has said this a lot. When the spirit's right, the money's always there.
Right.
So
and what I'm finding, what I'm finding out, what worked back then, you get a bunch of newcomers together, get shipped together, and you go. And they all come back fired up and excited again, wanting to do something, you know, to carry this message.
Yep. Today it's about like pulling teeth to get them to want to go, and sometimes they want to go, and then at the last minute they back out. If they'd ever go, just once. That's all it takes, isn't it?
Well, I've got a group of them now that are, I took to Florida last year, and one guy went with me there, come back, and he went back this year, and another newcomer went with us this year, and they're both come back, and they're excited about going on the next road trip.
Awesome, awesome. Anyway, Camilla, do you have any questions?
I certainly do. I'm wondering, Bill, I've got a new sponsor who just says she's willing, says she wants to learn, but doesn't actually do anything. Do you have any secrets in how to motivate newcomers?
Well, it's like Joe Proctor taught me. You can only help those that want it. And Greg taught me as long as they're can handle the pain, just be there, available, and ready for them when they're ready for us.
What do you think about these newcomers who are perpetually newcomers? Many years, and they can't get more than a little bit of time. Do you ever feel like giving up on them, or if they come to you, do you still encourage them? Do you ever get discouraged?
Well, you get discouraged, but you keep encouraging. You know, you keep participating with them. You don't surrender. You don't, because there's no addict that you know, it's, what do you want to call it, unreachable. Everyone's reachable. It's just caring for them enough that they can care for themselves. You know, and that's what I found out. You know what I mean? It's a lot of surrender. You know, and just working on ourselves, and being available for them when they're ready.
Okay. Where do you see the fellowship being in 5 years or 10 years?
Now, where do I see the fellowship at in 5, 10 years?
Yep.
I think what we're doing, in fact, Jim went home, and he just posted today, you know, how excited he was again. He can see there's hope for our fellowship again. You know, and as we're opening up this literature process, I think it's going to bring major changes to this fellowship, and I think it's going to be an exciting time for us again. And I really see an excitement that that's going to happen. And when addicts can get that spirituality and start doing service out of spirituality once again, I believe our fellowship's going to grow. You know, and I just have a lot of hope right now for the next 5, 10 years. You know, and, I just can't. You know, I'm just so excited because I know that there's going to, you know, that there's going to be such a positive virus from what happened this weekend. And I hate even use the word virus, but it's going to go viral like that. You know, at this moment, there's so much excitement out there. I've been on the phone since I got home with people from Texas, people from Missouri, people from Kentucky, you know, and just that they're that excited. They're starting literature study groups in their meetings. Since I got home, you know, the people from Kentucky said they're going to start a new area. They got six groups. They're starting a literature committee to start writing the literature, and they wanted to know what chapter they could have in the grade book. It's just like you asking, what chapters can you have, you know, to start input and reviewing? And, I mean, you met Guido this weekend, and his home group is, you know, they're going to start a literature input and review committee, you know, in their group. You know, and I think that's going to be exciting is in the next 5, 10 years is getting group to empower groups again. And I think that's going to happen. Groups are going to get empowered. They're going to realize everything has to be accountable to them. And I believe we're just going to cut so many people's lives, and I think we're going to, you know, get that message out there that, you know, drug replacement is not an answer. You know, it's not an answer. I was talking with a doctor today about that, and he said, you're so right. He says, you know, he hopes to see us put together more literature that explains there is recovery without drug replacement. He said, because you guys got the right attitude, you know, for that. And he said, we don't have it. So I believe we're going to do major impact in that area and take the responsibility on educating the medical field about us, you know, and that there is hope for addicts and that we can break that bondage that's been going on with our drug and addicts back up, that we can break that and bring them people into our program and help them recover.
I agree with you. I was very excited since I left the town for this past weekend, and I felt so grateful that everything worked out, that I could be there, and I'm very excited about the future, too. There's nothing like that open, participatory writing that makes you feel so much a part of it, and I was sitting there this weekend, and even though I pale in comparison to the amount of clean time that was there, I felt very much a part of, and I thank you and the others who encouraged me and made me feel that way, because as a fellowship, I have so much gratitude for this new way of life. I just want to share it. I want others to feel what I've been able to feel, to have what I'm getting. You know, life is good, and it just keeps getting better and better. So.
Well, that's the excitement, you know, sitting there with you and that committee, you know, and watching that happen when we flow read it, and it's just like, I mean, there's so much excitement in that there meeting when we were doing that. That just inspired me.
Yes, me too. And I was so encouraged to see the way Friday night I was thinking, we've got a lot of people who are all bringing their own agendas to bear, and none of them were going to mesh together. But that feeling, it was like Friday night, everybody had to air their agendas. But after that, they all pulled together, and that was awesome. That was so awesome. That was really, really hopeful for me.
Right.
So, thank you so much, Bill. I don't have any other questions right now, but thank you so much for coming out tonight and sharing with us this exciting times we have ahead of us.
Yes.
That we are in.
Well, thank you for allowing me to participate tonight, okay?
Thank you. You're most welcome. Back to you,
again,
guys.
All right. Again, we at Historical Significance would like to thank you, Bill, for coming out again. And we will post both last week and this week up on our website for free download soon. One of our partners down there in Arkansas has worked with it and got some of the background noise out of last week's, and so we have last week's and this week's. So thank you for that. And
no, I appreciate it. Sorry about that call last week, because
you were driving, and that happens. So
no,
anyway,
I said I would try to move to Florida. Okay.
We have exciting speakers coming up, and a little note for the folks that listen to this, because some of y'all know where I am in my life, and y'all know where I am with the Narcotics Anonymous Fellowship. I have to work my principles real hard, because there's folks that with over 30 years that I have to ask them to speak to, and I don't like them. But I'm asking them because they have 30 years or more, and they're part of our fellowship. They have a lot of information no matter where they're at in their life, and no matter how I feel about their political views of Narcotics Anonymous, their political views and my political views do not belong in a meeting. So we're going to ask everybody that we know, and we're going to ask everybody that we don't like, because that's just the way principles work, folks. So that's how we put principles before personalities around here. So
here, here. Yeah. Woo.
Yeah. Now that we've gotten that far, we're going to ask a guy down there in Florida, two guys down there in Florida that Bill knows, you know. Actually, the guy that shared the public information world chair with you, we're going to ask the Bifter soon. He has a lot of information. So we're bringing him on board, too.
So, oh, good.
Yeah. Anyway, that's just a little note about me, folks, to let you know where we're at. We ask everybody.
Because we love our long-timers, all of them.
That's right. They've got a lot of love and information, and they love this fellowship all the same. Anyway, remember, folks, you can download all the former speakers. You can make a Seventh Tradition donation, and you can get teleconference meeting schedules and other phone meeting information at Historical Significance website, NA by phone. That's NABYPHONE, NABYPHONE.com. Now let's close with Just for Today. Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Tell yourself, just for today, I'll have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Tell yourself, just for today, I will have a program. I will follow it to the best of my ability. Tell yourself, just for today, through NA, I will get a better perspective on my life. Tell yourself, just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear. Thank you, folks.